You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. The friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people.
Good morning, this is Get Radio and welcome to the Business Brunch. My name is Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson & Terry Recruitment. Every week during the show, we share the stories, the expertise and the knowledge of business leaders large and small with you, the listener. And this week is going to be no different. On today's show, I'm really pleased to be joined by John Hoy, who is an independent heritage consultant of Hoy Consultancy. After this break, we're going to be talking with John all about heritage here in Oxfordshire and indeed his experiences, and give you, the listener, a little bit of an insight. This is the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson. We look forward to welcoming John after this. Get Radio. Welcome back. This is Get Radio and this is the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson. Today, I'm really excited, actually, to be joined by John Hoy, who is an independent heritage consultant of Hoy Consultancy. Welcome, John.
Good morning, Ben. How are you?
So well, thank you. And thanks for joining us this morning. Really appreciate it. John, for those who don't know you, do tell them all about you and indeed your business.
Thank you very much indeed. Yes, well, I've had a wonderfully blessed career working in the landed estates heritage sector. So just very briefly, my first role was down at Goodwood in Sussex as the assistant resident agent. I then moved up to Hertfordshire, where I was involved with the Nebworth Estate for 13 years, getting involved with rock concerts and some amazing filming and catering and banqueting opportunities. Then I spent a while at Warwick Castle. Then I moved with the Tussauds Group down to run Madame Tussauds in London. Then I got the fantastic opportunity to be the first chief executive at Blenheim Palace here in Oxfordshire, where I arrived in 2003. Spent 13 years running Blenheim, left, joined a firm of chartered surveyors called Bidwells, and then in 2018 set up Hoy Consultancy, which is where I enjoy still connecting with a whole variety of different heritage clients, as well as doing two or three non-exec roles just to keep my hand in around the sort of board tables as well.
Amazing. No, lots and lots to unpack there over the next hour. But before that, the most difficult question that I think most of our guests are asked is to pick a song on the radio. No pressure. But what is your song choice and why have you picked it?
Oh, that's easy, because I've only ever got one song at the very top of my list. And my daughters know it and everyone knows it. I absolutely love Steve Harley and Cockney Rebel. Come Up and See Me, Make Me Smile. It's just a song that I've always connected with. I saw Steve Harley at the Rainbow Theatre on a New Year's Eve concert way back at the end of the 70s. Just made a connection with Steve Harley. I think he's an inspirational guy. And it's a song, Come Up and See Me, Make Me Smile. What great lyrics.
Oxfordshire Station, Get Radio.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Following that very fitting song chosen by John, we've heard a little bit about John's background. And today, John's kindly agreed to join us to talk all about heritage in Oxfordshire. When putting these shows together, we have various topics. And I think heritage is a topic that, across almost 200 shows, we've never covered before. And you, the listener, wanted this to be covered. So thanks, John, for joining us. And thank you for giving some insight. So I'm going to start with what a lot would feel is a really obvious question. But what is heritage in Oxfordshire? And is Oxfordshire as strong for its heritage as maybe many of us would think?
Well, I think firstly, let's just focus on heritage within the UK, because it is the number one reason why people come to our shores, whether that be our heritage or our history or our traditions or our pageantry. It is the number one tourism reason why people come here. So as we bang on government doors and funding doors, you know, the importance of tourism and heritage is so, so important. And clearly Oxfordshire plays its role in that. About 52% of incoming tourists go to London and never leave London. So the big challenge is to get more people out of London, up the corridors of the M4 and the buses and the trains, and come to our brilliant county of Oxfordshire, where we have so much to offer, whether that be built heritage through the Oxford colleges, through places, wonderful places like Blenheim, or the smaller houses like Stoner and Buskett and Rousham, but also just the richness of our heritage surroundings, the landscape of the Cotswolds, There's just so much, the River Thames, there's so much to offer that we are a county that's very blessed and very ideally located to do ever more with our tourism and our heritage industry.
You make a really interesting point there in terms of do ever more. Do you feel that heritage, there's more opportunity for heritage in the UK or indeed Oxfordshire?
Oh, without question. I mean, certainly within Oxfordshire, we're very fortunate to have two organisations promoting what we do rather than just one. Most of the county is looked after by Experience Oxfordshire, which is brilliantly led by Hayley Beer-Gammage with a great board and great staff. And they do a wonderful job connecting into Visit England and Visit Britain. But we also have Cotswolds Plus, which pick up the sort of western edge of the county. So they're called LVEPs, Local Visitor Economy Partnerships. So we've got two LVEPs looking after Oxfordshire, which gives us sort of two strings to our bow. And they are very actively out there promoting us for the domestic market and the international market. And there's always more to be done. You can never stand still. Heritage is being created every day. You know, what we do today is creating the future heritage story. So, you know, we must never rest on our laurels. We've got to always keep pushing hard and working hard, because if we don't, somebody else is pushing harder and we'll miss out.
No, absolutely. And yeah, absolutely agree with you in terms of the great work that Hayley and the team do. She kindly joined us on the show a few weeks back. So thank you for that, Hayley. Just in terms of that piece, in terms of coming from London to Oxfordshire, what do you see as some of the reasons that tourists are staying in London? And what do you see as some of the really great things that we're doing in Oxfordshire to encourage that number to come out of London? So whichever way you want to take the question.
Well, I think people are very fixated about the safeness of staying in the city. They've arrived there, you know, it doesn't have to, they don't have to think too hard. They can get around on the tube. There's lots of museums and things to do in London. So I think it's quite an easy solution for them. And I think it's beholden upon all of us to make sure that the messaging is there to make them realise that, yes, they can do London, but yes, there's an awful lot more they can do in addition to London. And I think one of the big opportunities at the moment that's growing ever faster is film tourism or set jetting, as it seems to now being called, which is quite an unusual terminology. And Visit Britain are about to launch a really major campaign around film tourism. And clearly here in Oxfordshire, we have an awful lot of filming undertaken, whether that be within Oxford in the colleges or at Blenheim or at in the Cotswolds generally. There is so much filming happening. And so, you know, the success of the Netflix and Amazon productions around The Crown, around Bridgerton, are a wonderful, wonderful showcase for the brilliance of our built heritage. And then you've got some, you know, some of the showcase regal royal events, you know, the coronation recently helps showcase that our heritage in the UK is utterly unique. It's absolutely within our DNA, and it's the sole brilliant reason why everyone comes to the UK, because our heritage is so brilliantly amazing.
No, absolutely. And I'm going to ask you a little bit of a curveball here, if that's okay, John, but just really about a career within the heritage sector. So I think within this business show, we look at different angles. And I think one of the angles that is very topical at the moment is university students or school students are starting to think about what they want to do within their career. And are there good career opportunities within the heritage sector? What are some of the things to kind of consider when thinking about potentially working within the sector?
I think there are always opportunities in any sector. And I think if you sort of just look at the outer curve of heritage, you've got the hospitality sector. And that is massively struggling in terms of recruitment. So I think there are opportunities. I mean, just on the hospitality side of it, I mean, the unemployment rates in the UK are around about 4%. Within the hospitality sector, it's running at about 20%. So it's staggeringly under-resourced. So, you know, we're not fully delivering on our heritage product because the hospitality part of it, or the hospitality sector, is really struggling to replace a lot of the staff that were lost through Brexit, etc. So it may be a different route into heritage, but I would encourage everyone to look at any way possible, you know, to sort of, you know, can I work at Blenheim? Can I work at Stoner? Can I work at Bicester Village? Can I work into these environments and find a foot on the ladder, and then you grow within the organization, and you can always move departments, change areas, because, you know, there isn't the obvious sort of masses of opportunities just to go in and be the archivist at Blenheim Palace, because there aren't many of them. But there are lots of other ways to connect with a place like Blenheim and to find employment in that sort of sector. So I'd encourage people to think a little bit outside the box and just get involved with the journey and the story, and you'll enjoy it. It's a very rewarding environment to be in, meeting visitors, meeting people who've traveled from overseas. It's a wonderful, rewarding and uplifting place to talk to visitors, to understand that they've come from Argentina because they wanted to see Churchill's birthplace. It's so inspiring, and it's very uplifting, and I'd encourage more to get connected and to get involved with it.
No, absolutely. And just under that note, I think one of the things I've always noticed about you, John, is you're so passionate about the sector, which is inspiring in its own right. But do you find that from some of the people you've worked with over the years within the sector, do you find that people often join the sector because they're looking for a job and happen to work at Blenheim and then catch the bug? Or do you find that there's a lot of people particularly wanted to come and work within the heritage, within the heritage area?
I think it's both, obviously. There are some that just have that calling, that they have done history at school or at A-level or even at university, and they have this real connection with the past and a real deep understanding of what heritage means. And so those people are naturally going to get drawn into that type of environment. But I think others almost find it by default, and they end up perhaps going the hospitality catering route and end up working in an environment which is a tourist attraction. And then they get sort of sucked into the sort of the history side of that. So I think I wouldn't limit it to being one or other of your questions. I think it's both. But I do think it's important that there's passion in whatever you do, whether that be recruitment or radio broadcasting or whatever. You've got to be passionate about what you do, because that's what you get up in the morning and you go to work with. And if you don't enjoy what you do, then you need to have a good look in a mirror and say, you know, what else could I be doing that I would rather enjoy? We only get one shot at life, and we might as well have a good crack at enjoying it. And the other factor of heritage is that it's blessed with some amazingly maverick and diverse and weird people. All the families that live in these houses have got so many stories and so much history and so many, you know, dare I say it, sort of skeletons in cupboards, etc. So, you know, you're connecting with some fascinatingly interesting people. And I've been so lucky to work in some amazing places. And I mean, for me, you know, I've just been invited to become a trustee of Nebworth and to go back there as a trustee, having worked there and run it for 15 years in the 80s and 90s, which to me is a wonderful cycle of sort of life, if you like, that they've seen in me somebody that understands them. I've stayed connecting with the family ever since I left there in 1997, and they've invited me back to be a trustee, which is a wonderful endorsement of my passion for them, if you like, and their house. But you know, Nebworth is a tiny fraction of the scale of a Blenheim business, but it punches way above its weight. And Nebworth has done some amazingly big things. You know, we had the last concerts I ran at Nebworth were the back-to-back Oasis shows in 96. So we've done, you know, these places don't have to just be of a Blenheim scale to make a difference. They've all got historical relevance as to why they're important.
Absolutely. And I think one of the points you made earlier there is about loving whatever you do. And actually, also, I think the other lesson there is staying in touch with your former employer. Stay in touch, because you never know how that circle may continue. John, thank you so much for your thoughts so far. Let's continue the conversation after this.
Introducing you to local trusted experts. This is the Business Brunch. Sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network, the friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Sign up to our mailing list at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. I'm really delighted today to be joined by John Hoy, who's kindly agreed to join us to talk about heritage here in Oxfordshire. So, John, I'm just keen to bring the conversation really on to good heritage and really kind of some of the things that are good practice. So I guess if you were to look at some of the organizations that you've worked with within the heritage sector who have done really well, whether that be commercially or whether that be in terms of visitor experience or something else, what are some of the good practices that heritage organizations can implement and learn from?
Well, I think firstly, it's terribly important that we do all talk to each other. And I think, you know, our black book of life, if I can call it that, is so important. The people you meet on the way up, through your career. And this is what I say to my daughters, you know, you never know when you might need to go and ring that person up or email them and ask them for a favor. So connections and contacts are absolutely vital in whatever you're doing, at whatever stage of wherever you are, at whatever level of the ladder. So important. I mean, in terms of heritage and tourism businesses, when I was very fortunate to sit for 8 years on the advisory board for Visit England, which gave me a wonderful insight into, you know, the tourism engine, if you like, at the sort of nation level, which was terribly valuable for me in terms of then applying some of that learning and the connections, if you like, down to specific sites within specific counties. So I wouldn't separate out my experiences at Nebworth to Warwick Castle to Blenheim Palace, because they're all massively different. And they are all of a different scale, of a different relevance, of a different historical period. And they all have different things to contribute. But I think the main thing is to always stay fresh, always stay alert, and always be looking out for new opportunity. My mantra has always been, it's not about the money. It's about value for time. And if you're looking to persuade somebody to spend time at your attraction, it's about the experience and the immersive enjoyment they get whilst they're with you, which will encourage them to A, come, B, stay longer, and B, potentially even return, but absolutely to tell 10 other people of the amazing day they had at X property. So it's value for time, which has always been my, if you like, benchmark to get right, not are we charging enough money or could we charge more? Because at the end of the day, if the value for time and the experience is correct, then what they've paid for it becomes less of a concern. So I always look at those mantras. And then obviously the people element of it is so important. There are some brilliant, brilliant people working in this sector. And the value, you know, the knowledge and the passion that they give to this sector, you know, working 8 days a week, you know, stupid hours every day. It's a sector that just sucks you in. I mean, you know, I've always worked weekends because events happen at weekends. So, you know, Sundays we're always running Nebworth and events at Blenheim and whatever. But that's the enjoyment, because you know you're doing something that you're getting enjoyment from. Your staff are enjoying the connection with the people and the place, and the visitors are having a fantastic time out. So, you know, what's not to like and what's not to celebrate? But, you know, you can't stand still. You know, there's so many aspects to it, the educational levels of it, in providing that educational opportunity to children and youth groups to come in and understand the history and go away with better knowledge. There's so many levels, Ben. You can't really break it down too much, but sorry, I talk a lot of passionately about heritage, but there isn't one answer, but there's so much to celebrate.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. You touched on there about school groups, which I think is really interesting. And we've run past shows around the future or the next generation. Do you feel that we're doing enough in Oxfordshire, or as parents or as schools or education? Is there more that we can do to teach our younger generation about the history and about the heritage of Oxfordshire? And what would be some of the things that what would be some of the steps to learn what is in Oxfordshire and go and have those day trips?
Well, I think the sort of key stage learning tools that children have to play with obviously features very heavily on certain periods of history, whether it be the Tudors or the Stuarts, etc. So it's very important that is made usable for school trips. And the challenge we've got on school trips is obviously the cost involved, particularly the coach to get them from the school to the site and back again. And so wherever we can find grants or government support or help via the attraction to sort of subsidize some of those travel costs, will make heritage and visiting attractions more accessible. So it's important we keep working on that. But I think looking to the future of heritage and the future of tourism attractions, clearly, you know, technology is going to play its card as we go forward. And I think that's quite exciting. And I think it could be probably the biggest disruptor to this sector that we've seen for a very long time. You know, we've worked with digital augmented reality and virtual reality for a while, but we've now got AI coming onto the onto the radar, and that could take over the whole thing. So it's very important that AI doesn't replace anything. It's very important it entices it, invites it and excites it, but doesn't replace it. So we've got to use AI very carefully. Clearly AI can be used to, I don't know, bring the Colosseum to life in Rome with warriors fighting in the Colosseum. It can bring the Mary Rose back to life before it sank. So it can do things that we physically can't do today, but it mustn't replace what we have got today. But we've got to use it very carefully. Clearly, AI will help the back office side of businesses hugely as well, whether it be ticketing, predicted numbers, rotoring, data capture. So AI is going to be very important going forward. And that's very much a thing of our youth, in the sense that I'm an old dinosaur and AI to me is still something I'm trying to understand. But clearly, you know, the youth going through schooling today will be very much exposed to it. And I think that's exciting because they will be the next generation to lead, inspire and drive the heritage sector.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. No, really, 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 really interesting points there. Thank you. And just in terms of this collaboration piece, there's probably going to be two parts to this question, but I'm going to split them up if that's OK. I know that Hayley, who we spoke about earlier, and the team and lots of people, including yourself, have done a lot of work over the years in terms of making Oxfordshire as one and doing a lot of work to get tourists to stay here for longer and to go to Blenheim and to use the Octobus company and to use the colleges, etc., etc. What can small businesses listening now kind of learn from that? And how should we embrace heritage? And what can be that kind of mutual gain from, I guess, kind of all working together?
Well, I think a phrase I use a lot is cluster marketing, where you take Blenheim as a dot, but then you look at the cluster of everything opportunity-wise that's around it, whether that be tea rooms, whether that be bed and breakfast, whether that be Airbnb, whether that be hotels, whether that be small other museums. So we've got to be wiser, I think, to not look at ourselves in isolation. And that's where Experience Oxfordshire and Cotswold Plus come in terms of packaging together. That if you come into Oxfordshire, you maybe have, I don't know, one night within Oxford, and then you go out and you have one night in the Cotswolds. That gives you a 3-day trip. And within that 3-day trip, you can do these 4 or 5 sort of tourism nuggets whilst you're there. And you can shop here and you can have a cup of tea here and you can walk up this hill and look at this view from stop 3. So I think it's about working more together. Blenheim has been extremely good at pulling together some of the assets and attractions around it. They work very closely with Bicester Village, for instance. They work very closely with Oxford. And that sort of triangle of Oxford, Bicester, Blenheim is a sort of triangle route that we try to make sure people get sort of sucked into, so that they're there for more than just a sort of an afternoon or a day. But it's, you're right, the challenge is to get people to stay longer. Because if we can get people to stay longer, we take the pressure off Oxford City Centre. Because people then aren't all trying to arrive on 62 buses at 10 in the morning and all trying to leave on 62 buses at 4 in the afternoon. If we can get people to come, you know, get off the bus and stay somewhere, that's much better from a logistical point of view and from an environmental impact point of view. So it's a continual process. There isn't a one trick answer. There's not a magic wand. But I'm a great believer in cluster marketing and getting all of our assets together and making sure that we build packages, build itineraries that are so powerfully appealing that people will then lock into them. And that's what Experience Oxfordshire are doing by going to some of the big trade shows. There's a wonderful show in January, I think, each year called Excursions, which is looking at the UK travel trade market. Oxfordshire's always represented at that. And basically, we're selling the opportunity to visit our great county and to experience all of our great assets within the county. And the more we can sell that into places through shows like Excursions, the more that we'll bring more people here for longer, hopefully.
No, absolutely. And actually, I think that whilst nobody is going to come here for 001 taxis, we've got radio adverts on Get Radio, actually 00 taxis do win. And there are so many winners as a result of more tourists coming to Oxfordshire. And it is so vital that we work together on that. Just building on the small business piece, because I think that they're using that example, like the taxi firm, for example, or the tea room or whatever. There will be a lot of businesses who initially will look at the subject of this show and think, oh, it doesn't affect me. I'm not a heritage business. How can businesses really embrace heritage? And what are some of the tips around that topic?
Well, I would certainly knock back on the suggestion that heritage as a conversation piece doesn't affect everybody, because my belief is it's the building block of the whole county.
Absolutely.
Because if you look at the inward investment into Oxfordshire And you think about some of the big global tech companies that may be looking at Oxfordshire as a place to, you know, to move their global headquarters. I think they should be looking at our heritage and visitor economy offer almost first and foremost, because a lot of these global companies care more about the welfare of their workforce than they do necessarily about the square inches of the office space that the staff are going to sit in. So, you know, we need to celebrate and showcase what an amazing county Oxfordshire is for places to see, places to go, places to stay, places to eat, places to walk, places to enjoy the views. Because if the staff of that global tech company end up located in Oxfordshire and they have an amazing time, then that company is going to be a happy company. So I think, you know, that statement alone embraces every single viewer and listener to your program, because that should cover everybody. So I'm a great believer that everybody has a connection with tourism, the visitor economy, heritage, this sector, whether it be, you know, the bus company or the taxi driver or the tea shop or the shop or any part of this sector. They all have a connection. We're all consumers of our heritage. And it's really important that we understand that, celebrate that, talk about that. I mean, Blenheim Palace is a World Heritage Site. You know, we are very, very unique in terms of Oxfordshire that we have a World Heritage Site. And it was one of the very, very first ones inscribed back in 1987. And it's actually quite an interesting story, because if there's only about 35, I think, UK World Heritage Sites out of about 1,200 in the world. And if Blenheim wasn't a World Heritage Site but wanted to become one today, it would need to pull together all of the paperwork to apply to UNESCO to go onto the tentative list, which is sort of the subs bench. And to do that probably would cost north of £250,000. I know one site in particular that spent well north of £250,000 just to get on the tentative list, which isn't any guarantee of future success. It means you're noted as being under consideration. Back in 1987, the Duke had a friend who was an MP in Parliament. There was a bill going through Parliament to look at the first batch of UK World Heritage Sites. He put forward Blenheim, and the Duke got a letter, came through the post, which said, "I'm delighted to let you know that Blenheim Palace and Park have been inscribed as one of our UK's first World Heritage Sites." And that was in 1987. I think we were the third or fourth site in the UK to be inscribed. So that cost nothing other than the price of a stamp. So times have changed in terms of World Heritage status, but it's such a badge of honour to be a World Heritage site. As I said, there's only 1,200 sites in the world, and Blenheim is one of them. So we're very lucky in Oxfordshire that we've got such recognition of the level of our heritage status, if you like, within the county.
Absolutely. Really, really fascinating. John, thank you for your thoughts so far. Let's continue the conversation after this.
The Business Brunch Podcast with Ben Thompson, sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. Discover our membership packages to help you grow your business at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, I'm really excited today to be joined by John Hoy, who is a heritage expert and has kindly agreed to join us this morning to talk all about heritage here in Oxfordshire. John, we've spoken quite a lot about heritage and how we can collaborate and the visitor economy. And I'm keen to build the conversation to locals in inverted commas. And I think that from past shows that we've had, probably more hospitality, but they've gone into heritage. I think the big thing that a lot of the guests have spoken about is that balance of making your organisation really attractive to the locals and for them to use you. But then at the same time, we've spoken a lot about tourism makes such a massive part of Oxfordshire. So what would be your advice and what are some of the things you've seen under getting that balance so each organisation is really great for everyone?
Well, I think all sites have a combination of different offers. Stoner Park's got an amazing adventure playground called Tumblestone Hollow, which has been very popular and is loved by families and children. Blenheim is a fantastic film location, draws in some big productions, and people love seeing behind the camera and seeing what was used and filmed. But I think events are really important as well. And we have a raft of amazing events that get hosted and staged here in Oxfordshire. And they're a wonderful reason for local people to go out and support their heritage, to go and visit an amazing supercar show, whether it be the supercar show at Stoner or Salon Privé at Blenheim. There are car events happening everywhere. Lots of great craft shows, country fairs, jousting. There's so much going on in the county. And then there are the music festivals, which are another magnet for where people can go and support the music industry, whether, again, it be some of the festivals within the county or Nocturne Live at Blenheim. Sorry, I mentioned Blenheim rather a lot, but I was there a long time. I think it's about diversity. It's about imagination. It's about, you know, keeping everything fresh. You can never stand still. When I first went into Nebworth and also first into Blenheim, there was a very, very thin events calendar, which we rapidly built an events calendar. But you can't then sit back and say, right, we've done that. That's in place for the next 5 years. A, because one or two of those events won't quite hit the mark or might go somewhere else. And secondly, you want to keep it fresh so that the people who are coming to you think, oh, there's a couple of new events this year, so we must go to those. So it's about always being creative and diverse, looking at new exhibitions you can run every year. There's exhibitions hosted at all of our wonderful stately homes, and the great thing about a temporary exhibition is that it's a call to arms. If you don't visit it for the 8 weeks it's on, you're going to miss it. So again, the communication, the messaging, how social media is now encouraging people to connect with heritage and heritage sites, so important. Obviously, some of the membership schemes are important. Obviously, Blenheim Palace, we introduced the annual pass back in 2008 as a response to the downturn around that time. And it's proved to be a phenomenally successful vehicle in the sense that, you can buy a day, you get a year. Wonderfully successful. And I remember standing talking in the sort of queue to get the annual pass sort of verified. I was chatting to an American and he was from New York. And I said, I'm intrigued that you're queuing up to get your annual pass. I said, when are you planning to come back? He said, oh, we'll never come back. We'll never ever be back. This is a once in a lifetime trip. He said, but I want this in my wallet. I want a Blenheim Palace annual pass in my wallet, because it symbolically was important to him to have that. And I think there is that connection that people make, that they've got an annual pass. And so they're a little bit, it's not quite ownership, but it's patronage. People feel that they've made a connection, that it's a little bit of theirs. And I think that's really sweet. And I think it's really something you can build upon and work upon. I think other sites should look at their sort of membership models, their sponsorship models for how they connect with people. But it's an exciting and rewarding sector that continues to have so much to give, and it can never stand still.
Absolutely. It's really, really interesting, actually, just in terms of that piece of the person who wanted the annual pass, because I think that... So one of the big things that I see every time I go into Oxford a weekend is that the open top buses, there's queues to go onto them. They're really busy. And I remember in a past show that Phil Southall of the Oxford Bus Company said, how many times have you been on the open top bus living in Oxford? And my answer was never, but I have been in Rome and Athens and Paris and so on and so forth. But you don't in your own county. And actually, I think that there are so many things that in our county we probably as locals don't necessarily do.
I completely agree. And certainly when we introduced the annual pass in 2008, almost the biggest single factor that we saw was suddenly a massive connection to our local community. Because prior to that moment, they'd looked at our pricing and thought, I can't remember exactly where we were. Let's say we were 20 quid. Okay, it's £20 to buy a palace ticket. Why would I do that? It's on my doorstep. I'm not paying £20 to go and visit Blenheim Palace. But suddenly when they realised that they could come in and pay £20 and have a pass for a whole year, why wouldn't they do that? It was blindingly obvious that they should do it. And so we suddenly almost overnight went from a site that was thought to be a little bit pricey and a little bit not quite sure I want to spend the money to, well, I've got to. I've got to. It's going to become my go-to haven place. And certainly through COVID and lockdown, all of those people with annual passes, the park was their haven. The park was the place they went to find space. And it was, wonderful that they had that opportunity to enjoy the park, where they could walk to it, obviously safely, etc. But it was wonderful to see the annual pass holders that then almost got the extra value back from enjoying such an amazing parkland setting and enjoying it when space was at a premium and they needed to be careful where they were. But I think that point about connecting with your locality. I mean, I would always encourage anyone to support and celebrate the heritage on your doorstep, because if you don't, there is a risk it may fail and die and not be there or be closed in 5 years' time, because these places are fragile businesses. Everyone looks into a stately home and thinks, God, they must be really rich. They live in a big house. Look at that big park. But you forget the running costs of a place like that. And most of the owners of such places are asset rich and cash poor, as a generality. And basically any money and every money and every pound they've got goes on keeping the place wind and watertight, restoring the stonework, the roof, the guttering and everything else. So these places need all the help in the world. So I would encourage everybody and anyone to support their local stately home, whether it be Stoner, whether it be Buskett, whether it be Kingston Bagpuce, whether it be Blenheim. But let's enjoy and celebrate heritage within Oxfordshire. There's a lot to play with. Go out and play with it.
No, absolutely. Really, a couple of things I'm really keen to ask, actually, off the back of those points, is firstly just funding, which is a really interesting piece. I know that Didcot Railway Centre, for example, have had lots of lottery grants to keep them going. But I guess I'm just keen to understand the dynamics, and I appreciate there might not be a one size fits all. But I think from an outside point of view, we turn up at Kingston Bagpuce and think, oh, they're really lovely gardens, and pay our however much to get in and look. But as a sector, how are these buildings managing? And is there funding to look after them? Or because I sense from what you touched on there that a lot of them are privately propped up, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, there's basically three different types of stately home ownership in very broad summary. You've got the National Trust properties, which are obviously under the National Trust umbrella, and there are a number of those in each county. There's then a cluster of properties owned by English Heritage, which again are under the English Heritage, which is sort of a branch of government-ish, so English Heritage property. And then there are the historic houses, which are all privately owned. And so they are absolutely fighting their corner on their own. Clearly, Historic England are keen lobbyists into government for funding support, and they have support and backup on that from places like Visit Britain, Visit England, ALVA, the Association of Leading Visitor Attractions, are all lobby groups into government. But essentially, you know, historic houses are a family. I mean, if you take Stoner, you know, it's been in the Camoys family for over 1,000 years.
Wow.
And the thing with that is that there becomes a massive opportunity, burden, however you want to put it, on the family that's incumbent at that moment, not to be the one that drops the ball. So the pressure is immense to be, you know, the generation that needs to, everyone wants to take it, you know, a step further forward and a step further up the ladder. You know, occasionally, you know, there will be a period where, I don't know, taxes might be high, or there might be a war, or even COVID, something which really damages and dents the business. And so the recovery from that becomes even more critical. But it's terribly important that funding is available. There isn't much funding now available. There was grant money through English Heritage previously. There's much less of that now because of government funding, et cetera. It's just not there. There were a number of schemes set up through COVID, the Culture Recovery Fund, et cetera, through the Heritage Lottery Fund, was an important lifeline for stately homes. Most of that's pretty much worked through the system now. There are still a few business recovery pots are left from Lottery Fund. There's some money through the Local Enterprise Partnership, which is now subsumed in Oxfordshire within the county council structure. So there are some pots of money that one can apply for there, but they're relatively small. So essentially, you know, you're down to how you run your business and running it effectively, efficiently, dynamically, inspirationally, entrepreneurially, to make sure that you make your mark in the sector and that you draw people to you in enough volume to make sure you've got the turnover to keep you afloat for another year.
Absolutely. And just a question I'm really keen to build on, and it's partly on topic but partly off topic, because I don't think we need to necessarily limit it to heritage, but I know that you touched on earlier in the show that you're about to become a trustee of one of your former employers, and I know that a lot of charities, and indeed a lot of heritage sites are charities, are looking for trustees. And I'm just quite keen to gain, I guess, your perspective on, I guess, what does it mean to a trustee? And if somebody is considering it, what are the benefits?
Well, I think the benefits are, of, in some respects, you know, the connection with the place and the people and the family, and to make a difference, to put something back and to make a difference. I think it's an interesting question, actually, and it's one I've debated a lot with other people. I think the makeup of a trustee board at a place like, I don't know, any stately home needs to have diversity and some real commercial spirit around it. I think historically, if you were to look into that and do a really good deep dive of the makeup of trustee boards across a lot of stately homes, you'll find that they are primarily trust lawyers and trust accountants and the family, which is all absolutely fine and dandy. But my view is that if you're looking at that business as being a dynamic engine in order to take that business forward on a strategic journey whereby it's going to unlock opportunity, are your trust lawyer and your trust accountant the best people to have around that table? Clearly, they need to be there because they're very important for legal and accountancy reasons. But I think you also need just a couple of other people there that have got some commercial entrepreneurial spirit and knowledge just to add a bit of color and flavor to the idea generation that's going on there. Because the families get tired of within these environments because they've lived it every day of their lives. They need that inspirational injection, if you like, of new blood and new ideas. And if there's a director or chief executive tasked with running the business, he or she needs that help and advice and support from a really strong board. So I think there's opportunities around trustee boards, certainly within this space, to be more creative, more dynamic. And I think if you are somebody out there that thinks you've got something to offer a place like a Blenheim or a Stone or whatever, then don't give up. Keep looking, keep talking. There are headhunters who go out there looking for trustees for boards or write to English Heritage and, you know, see what opportunities there might be around there. Because I think it is, you know, we need more people with that entrepreneurial fizz, if you like, to turn some of these places on.
Absolutely. No, really, really good advice. And on that note, we are coming towards the final stint of the show. And one of the things that we like to do on this show is end with a top tip. And I appreciate you've given lots of tips across the show, John. So it may well be, like a lot of our guests, that you're just underlining something in the notepad. But I guess under the umbrella of heritage in Oxfordshire and some of the things that we've spoken about, what would be, I guess, kind of your takeaway tip or the thing to remember for those listening at home?
I think my one piece of advice surrounding heritage is to really make sense of where you're going by understanding where you've come from. We're all indelibly shaped by the history and the villages and the towns and the buildings and the landscapes and the rivers and the hedgerows that surround us. But we've got to understand how they were created, who created them, why did they create them? What money did they have to create them? Because if we understand all of that, then we become more rounded and thoughtful critics. We become better consumers and we become better celebrants of the importance of heritage. So that would be my message, is get stuck into heritage, understand it better. Don't just take it for granted, because the fact that it's been there forever isn't a good enough reason not to understand why it's been there forever and what purpose was it serving and why did it appear. So get involved, because that will spark your interest. And once you've sparked your interest, you'll want to stay better connected. And we need more people better connected with heritage to make a real difference within Oxfordshire.
I couldn't agree more. And what a great, great tip to end the show. But unfortunately, that is the end of the show. So thank you so much, John, for your time and such contribution to the discussion this morning. We really, really, really appreciate it. If you don't know John, I definitely recommend looking up John on the likes of LinkedIn and online. So John Hoy, who is an independent heritage consultant of Hoy Consultancy. And thank you again. Just finally, a reminder that you can listen to this show every Sunday on the radio and online at 11 a.m. There is also a podcast version, which is available via all your favourite podcast platforms and is released on the Monday morning. And do look out for the video format, which is posted on the Get Radio Facebook page every Tuesday. But for now, whatever you're doing in Oxfordshire, try and visit as many heritage sites as you can and enjoy the rest of your Sunday. And we'll see you next week.